Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Craziness abounds and abides, doesn't it? We're going to talk about, mainstream media is finally aware after how many days that there is something untoward going on in Lower Manhattan near Wall Street. So mainstream media has begun reporting on it. My gosh, my goodness. On NBC Nightly News, it was the second story tonight. But the reason it's being reported now is because of police violence and people being pepper sprayed and beaten and kicked and stomped. We'll get to that a little bit later in the program. This first hour is sponsored by Mary in Suquamish, Washington. Should I say her last name? I don't know either. Mary C. in Suquamish. Thanks, Mary. No message, just a sponsorship. She's sponsoring this hour and the next one. Thank you, Mary. We appreciate it. Remember last week, I first told you about an impending one-day strike by the California Nurses, National Nurses United. And what that strike was about. A couple of nights later, we had as a guest the president, co-president of National Nurses United. And they went ahead with their one-day strike on Thursday after receiving assurances from the managers of the hospitals they work for that adequate care would be provided. While the nurses were out, they made their point. Everything went along okay until the nurses went back on Friday and the hospitals locked them out. 6,000 nurses were locked out for a further 4 days by the hospital chain Sutter Health and the independent Children's Hospital in Oakland. Now, you can imagine what happened. Judith Ming, 66, died on Saturday at one of the Sutter hospitals after being given what police say was, quote, a non-prescribed dosage of medication, end quote, at lethal levels. The drug was administered by a stand-in nurse brought in from Louisiana by the company that owns the hospital, Sutter Health. About 23, when we talked about this last week, do you remember the woman's name? I'm terrible at remembering names, but I can't think of the woman's name that we had on. Do you remember, Kathy, the head of the Nurses United? I'm drawing a blank, too. But she said about 23,000 members of America's largest nurses union, National Nurses United, were to go on strike last Thursday, and they did, intending to return to their position 24 hours later. Kaiser Permanente allowed 17,000 back on the job. 6,000 nurses were locked out for a further 4 days. One of the locked out nurses said the union had given 2 weeks notice to employers before the strike began to allow them to assemble suitably qualified replacements. But apparently that hasn't happened, she said. She said the lockout had been unnecessary and regrettable. She said, quote, qualified nurses were available to work, but management prevented us from returning. So, yes, I believe that the blame for the patient's death lies with them. She added nurses with 24 years experience were showing up for work, but were denied entry by security guards, end quote. Deborah Berger, that was the name of the woman that we talked with last week. Now, there's a police inquiry here, and the hospital is carrying out an internal investigation. The medical center's vice president of medical affairs said the death was caused by medical error. And Sutter Health, to add insult to the injury that they caused. See, this is what capitalism does. This is what a for-profit hospital system or medical system or healthcare delivery system, anywhere on earth, but especially in this country. This is how management responds. Sutter Health put out a media statement that accused the union of exploiting what Sutter Health calls, quote, tragic death of a patient to further its own bargaining purposes, end quote. Not anything even remotely resembling that occurred. What happened was Sutter Health refused to open the doors when the one-day job action was open and or over and kept the doors locked for 4 days, during which time Sutter Health is responsible for the death of a patient. But of course, blame the Nurses Association. How dare they for going out on strike? The union says the strike was part of the worsening relations between medical staff and the employers. The unions accuse these hospitals, these massive medical services conglomerates, of driving hospitals relentlessly in a commercial direction and imposing market-based cuts in services, even though they're described as not-for-profit institutions. Oh, right. Of course. The union said management, Kaiser Permanente, Sutter Health, and others, management is trying to roll back on standards of health provision, including the minimum nursing numbers per patient. Why should they, I don't know what the numbers are at any given hospital, why should they have one nurse for 10 patients? Why not have one nurse for 12 patients? Yeah, why not have two nurses for 26 patients? Now, in some of the medical centers involved in the strike, the hospital managers, acting on the instructions of the capitalist ownership and the for-profit private, I don't care if they're supposed to be not-for-profit, that's hogsnot, and you know it is. Managers have tried to change the conditions of nurses so they would have to pay $4,000 more a year to have their own children treated at the hospitals at which they work. And that's a hike, we mentioned this last week, that's a hike that the union members said would make the service they themselves supply unavailable to their own kids. Sons of bitches, kid. I mean, at what point does capitalist America wring out the last drop of goddamn blood out of us that they can get, and then what? They continue to wring. How much longer? Martha Cool, again, one of the locked out nurses, said it was inevitable that replacement nurses were less equipped to care properly for the patients who were in these hospitals. She said, quote, we work together. We know the equipment. We know each other's skills and abilities. When management brought in unqualified or even qualified workers, they don't have that advantage. And that sets people up, unfortunately, to make mistakes. End quote. What does the hospital say? Well, I told you what their statement is, that the union is using the death of a patient to further its own agenda. Unbelievable. Just thought I would let you know, after a one-day job action by the nurses' union, the corporate owners respond by locking the doors on the nurses for 4 days. And when the unthinkable happens, they blame it on the nurses. Wow. So typical, so expected, and so much what happens. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Frat housing, cake tapping, shirt tucking, back slapping, haters of hippies like me. Tree hugging, peace loving, pot smoking, porn watching, lazy ass hippies like me. Tree hugging, love making, pro choice and gay wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing. And most likely will.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. As expected, the corporate media has been ignoring what has been happening. We are now in the ninth day of the protests at Wall Street. OccupyWallStreet.org is a website that you can go to get video, streaming, and otherwise. Ninth day. And corporate media to this point has pretty much ignored it, except to denigrate or try to marginalize what's going on. Until the violence, until 80 arrests, was it 80 on Sunday, until the head cracking and the pepper spraying into the faces of people who were doing nothing, absolutely nothing, except protesting a corporate culture that says most Americans aren't worth a goddamn thing, nothing. I'm telling you, it's coming. It's coming. Chris Hedges, who attended or participated, in a proper word, in the protests over the weekend, said, quote, "The real radicals have seized power." That would be the capitalists, the corporate class. "And they are decimating all impediments to the creation of a neo-feudalistic corporate state, one in which there is a rapacious oligarchic class, a thin managerial elite, and two-thirds of this country live in conditions that increasingly push families to subsistence level," end quote. A rapacious oligarchic class. How much more can they take, truth seeker? How much more can they steal? How much more blood can they wring out of us? I'm thinking not too much more. I really am. Hedges went on. He said the corporate state wants to, quote, "reduce the working class to a status equivalent to serfdom. They want us to remain passive and to remain frightened. And as long as we remain passive and frightened, entranced with their electronic hallucinations, television, we are not a threat. The moment people come out and do this, the sort of protesting, the corporate state is terrified. And if you doubt me, look around at the huge numbers of cops. And not only that, but the kind of brutality the cops have visited on peaceful protesters," end quote, Chris Hedges. I watched some of the video scenes of young women being pepper sprayed in the face by a New York Police Department. What am I trying to say? Upper ranks of the officers. They wear white shirts if they're lieutenant or above, I understand. And you can watch the cop reach across an enclosure where these women are more or less trapped and pepper spray several of them in the face and then just wave his pepper spray gun around at everybody. I mean, it's just, what is the point, you son of a bitch? What is the point in doing that? Is it because you can? And what are these young people protesting, and not so young, what are they protesting for? Among other things, the rights of cops to have a goddamn job. That's another thing, Mr. Lieutenant Police Officer NYPD. You think they're out there just to raise hell? You think there's no reason for this, you moron? Are you protecting and defending? Isn't that what it says, to protect and defend? Are you doing that when you pepper spray protesters who are doing nothing violent, who are exercising their First Amendment right? You have just made enemies. This is just like the United States when we invade Iraq. And all of a sudden, we have 50 million new enemies. What the hell is wrong with a police officer who reaches across a barrier and sprays people who are already being entrapped? Don't answer. Victoria Sobel, a student at Cooper Union, she was arrested over the weekend She said today, quote, the protests were peaceful. There was no property being destroyed. We were not prepared for these police tactics. This tactic of kettling, they call it, where they surround us with an orange mesh and then arrest us. They maced some of the women. So mainstream media is finally paying attention. But you see, as is always the case, there is no analysis or context, oversight, or overview, insight, none of that. It's just, oh, looky, 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 get the cameras over here. Looky, looky, people are being maced and beaten up. Looky, go quick. God damn it, get an NBC reporter down there. Hurry up, where's ABC? Oh, my God, is Wolf Blitzer working on something? Their head's being cracked now. This hour is being sponsored by Mary in Suquamish. Gotta hope I'm saying that right. Washington. Thank you, Mary. No message, just sponsorship. Thanks. Again, regarding OccupyWallStreet.org, which is where you can go to get as much of this as you want to explore. Victoria Sobel, or Sobel, is a student at Cooper Union. She went on to say, quote, I was told about this protest over the summer. I got to the protest the first day after I got off work. I thought it would be this overly nebulous thing just about, you know, creating mischief, but that's not what I saw. It was people who wanted the 99% who are hurting economically to finally protest against the 1% who have illegitimately benefited. What I saw in the park was a decent-sized group of people working to achieve something, an independent community to sustain the protests. Initially, I was helping with food distribution, but now I'm helping with the finances and with the live video stream. Now, if you want to see this video stream, go to livestream.com, livestream.com/globalrevolution, livestream.com/globalrevolution. But it's always always intriguing. Whoever came up with the kind of insulting, realistic statement about television news, if it bleeds, it leads, was absolutely right. All of this activity that the American public could have explained to them, because how many people are going to check out the websites? How many people are interested in why? If they do hear of some, oh God, there they go again, Maud, protesting down on, where are they now? Wall Street. Oh, for Christ's sake. Why don't they get a job? Not realizing the irony of what they're saying. But this is where corporate media could, I guess, if it weren't corporate media, or if it weren't now owned by those people who want to destroy this society. This is where media can serve a purpose. Now, okay, that's right. Alternative media, become your own media. You got it. Absolutely. Videotape everything. Or not videotape, video everything. Digitally record everything, which is what's happening. Get it up on the web, which is what's happening. But a huge segment of the population that should be seeing this, should be hearing about this, is not. And if corporate news were to put up more than just the head smashing, which is what I saw on NBC tonight, and the pepper spraying, so that Ralph and Maude sitting at home on their asses watching the news, look here, there's a bunch of these damn hippies again, Maude, look here. Would the television news would give insight, overview, context as to what this is about? But that's ridiculous for me to say it. I'm surprised that NBC sent anyone down there, even for the head busting part, even for the pepper spraying part, because NBC, let's face it, is owned in part by General Electric, one of the most warmongering corporations in modern history, whose CEO or ex-CEO, I guess CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, sits on Barack Obama's business advisory council, whatever, economic team. I don't know what the names they give these freaks. A guy who destroys jobs, sends them overseas, sends the manufacturing capabilities overseas so the GE can make even more of a profit. I'm surprised NBC sent anyone. Well, it was the head-busting, Mike. You know, locking up protesters, which is what we're witnessing again. But, I mean, really locking them up. It's starting to change now. Instead of trespass or not obeying a lawful police order, now it's becoming assault on a police officer. That can be a felony. Or is a felony. Now it's becoming criminal trespass. That can be a felony. Locking up protesters could make Wall Street millions of dollars. Y'all have heard of CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, right? Here's how CCA describes themselves. This is on file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Quote, "We are the nation's largest owner and operator of privatized correctional and detention facilities and one of the largest prison operations in the United States, behind only the federal government and three other states. We currently operate 66 correctional and detention facilities, correctional my ass, including 45 facilities that we own, with a total design capacity of approximately 90,000 beds in 19 states in the District of Columbia. We are also constructing an additional 1,124-bed correctional facility in Millen, Georgia, under a contract awarded by the Georgia Department of Corrections. The facility, which we will own, is currently expected to be completed during the first quarter of 2012. We also own two additional correctional facilities that we lease to third-party operators. We specialize in owning, operating, and managing prisons and other correctional facilities and providing inmate residential and prisoner transportation services for government agencies." And their stock was up today. It's now at $23.24. And Matt in East Jordan, Michigan, who sent this to me, points out it's a growth industry. From NASDAQ.com. Yeah, NASDAQ.com. "Private prison companies' growth went hand in hand with political influence. Business booms for CCA in cash-strapped California." In early 2012, the prison's owner, Correction Corporation of America, expects to fill Appleton's Prairie Correctional Facility and another facility in Colorado with 3,256 inmates from California. In the last 10 years, the revenues of CCA, the country's biggest private prison company, has almost doubled, according to their annual reports. Blah, 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 blah. Critics say that CCA's success stems from their use of lobbying and campaign donations to push through tougher crime laws and increase detainment of illegal immigrants. Getting that light bulb above your head like they do in the cartoons? Good, good, good. Paul Ashton, author of a recent report on private prisons for the Justice Policy Institute, said in a conference call Wednesday, quote, private prison privatization contracts are designed by policymakers. It's important for these companies to have a political strategy to increase their market share. Son of a bitch. Market share. Prisoners. For two decades, it says here at NASDAQ, CCA was a member of a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Oh, them again, the Koch brothers, a nationwide organization made up of corporations and state legislators. At an ALEC meeting in December 2009, where CCA employees were present, according to NPR, the group crafted the model legislation that would later become Arizona's SB 1070 and a host of other similar bills across the country. You've heard of ALEC, haven't you, Truth Seeker? CCA and other private prison company executives saw immigration detainees as a significant new source of revenue. Although CCA denied pushing the Arizona bill, not us, and has since given up membership in ALEC. Well, you know, we're not there anymore. No, we have nothing to do with them. Lobbyists from the private prison industry flooded the Arizona State Capitol and donations streamed to the bill's supporters, ensuring its passage. A growth industry. Well, of course. So locking people up? It's the new growth industry! All right, can't make it in real estate anymore? Pork belly's going sour? Ah, nothing else to invest in? How about locked up people? Hot damn! Don't you dare to try to stop us. No one could for long. Searchlight on my trail. Tonight's the night. All systems fail. Hey, you! Good looking female. Come in.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So again, after more than a week of very little, if any, coverage of what's going on Wall Street, finally a couple of the major news gathering organizations decided to take a peek. The violent arrest of 80 protesters over the weekend did it. And NY1, their coverage showed that a councilman from Queens, Peter Vallone Jr., you've heard of him. He's no big fan of what's going on down there. He said, quote, you certainly cannot take over a New York City street. We have emergency vehicles to get through. People actually have jobs to get to, unlike these protesters. Not a trace of irony in what he said. Nothing. And again, the violent turn that the protests took yesterday involved, according to people who were there, almost exclusively supervising police officers, the white shirts. One of the protesters said, quote, "We feel that the blue-collar cops are pretty much with us," end quote. And as a matter of fact, on I think it was on Lawrence O'Donnell tonight, he was showing some of the police violence and showed that most of the violence was either being committed by or ordered by the white shirts. There was one blue-collar cop, blue-shirted cop, who had a camera by one of the protesters right in his face, and the cop was saying, "Okay, move back, please, move back." Please? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? And, of course, the people were moving back. Now, like I said, a little bit later in the program tonight, more on this. And I'll try to provide some context, insight, overview, whatever you want to call it. You know who's being targeted are the photographers, and especially the videographers. The people who are there recording everything, digitally recording everything. And that's who so many of the officers, the senior officers, are going after. Two protesters who were maintaining the live video feed of this action were arrested on Saturday. The first one claimed that she was detained solely because she was holding a camera. And one of the organizers, again, Patrick Bruner, said, quote, "These are the first people the police go after. They're always the first to get held up, the ones with the cameras." And I don't know if you know this. It is a protester's right, of course, to film a demonstration or an arrest. We know that from having participated. But according to the New York City Law Department, a spokesperson there issued a statement that said, quote, "You cannot interfere with police action. In other words, get in the middle of an arrest to take a photo or make a video," end quote. Now, it's kind of a stretch to say that the people operating the live stream would be able to physically interfere with an arrest while holding a laptop. I mean, you know, that's ridiculous. And most of the people who are video recording or taking stills, they're outside, they're standing away. I mean, my God, you don't have to be a moron to figure this out. But apparently, somebody with the New York City Law Department, is that what this is? Says, well, you can't interfere with police action. A photographer named Barbara Ross said that she was filming Saturday's march down Broadway to Union Square when a white-shirted NYPD officer repeatedly warned her that she would be arrested unless she started marching with the demonstrators. She said, quote, "I was standing off to the side so I could document what was going on. You couldn't really see much from within the group. And he kept saying, 'You either join them or I'll arrest you.'" She said, "I wasn't blocking traffic or harming anything. It was obvious it was because I was holding a camera." And Jim Kiernan, who was shooting Saturday's protest for Gothamist, a New York City organization, said that NYPD officers were, quote, "definitely," end quote, zeroing in on anyone with a camera. At around 12th Street and 5th Avenue, Kiernan saw a large black SUV pull up next to a few police supervisors. Quote, "It was Ray Kelly, the superintendent. He rolled down his window, and I had a perfect shot, but I knew if I pointed my camera at him, I'd get arrested on the spot," end quote. Moments later, he said, quote, "A videographer who I had seen all day who didn't seem to be part of the protest was arrested. One officer took her camera, another cuffed her. A few seconds later, another photographer next to her gets arrested. No provocation whatsoever. That's when I decided I was done for the day," end quote. So, you want national news coverage? Sure. Just wait until the police begin to crack heads and spray young people in the face and not so young people in the face with pepper spray. You ever been sprayed with pepper spray? It makes tear gas feel like, flower perfume on a spring day in the middle of a meadow. Pepper spray is a bitch. It really is. It is very, very difficult to do anything except fall down and scream. Of course, the right-wingers love that.
Well, if you weren't there, why don't you get a goddamn job?
You know what I'm saying?
Guys, notice.
Seven past the hour, this is the Malloy Program. This hour is sponsored by Mary in Suquamish, Washington. She sponsored the first hour, too. I think it is time for Prairie 2's missive for this evening. Okay, you ready? We ought to have Prairie 2 music. I've said that before. How about Pink Floyd, Money? That'd be a good one. Maybe next time we do it, we'll give Prairie 2 some music. I mean, why should only Bob and Kay have music? Pew. Oh, and... And also, of course, Bridget, she has music. She hasn't written a lot lately for the program, but we have her music. Okay, we'll get something for Prairie, too. But tonight we're musicless. The title, Out of the Pizza Pan and Into the Fire. He writes, when the current Great Depression started, the southern states were booming and the Rust Belt states were already in serious decline from the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs. Now it's the South's turn to see steadily rising unemployment as the lower paid jobs are now being outsourced and the general lack of demand brings layoffs in the retail and service sectors. A reverse migration of skilled workers from Rust Belt states who have ties to the South also contributes to the unemployment rate, as they displace local workers. On top of this is the attitude of red state governments to slash jobs and cut revenue, and you have a self-reinforcing decline. One of the states with the fastest declining job situation is Texas, where governor and one-time presidential candidate Rick Perry and the Republicans are determined to do all the wrong things. They have yet to realize that an economy can't be operated on articles of faith. They have faith that cutting wages makes everybody rich. that no taxes on the rich will make more rich people. And the free trade is really free. An F5 tornado can be modeled with numbers put into equations, and numbers put into equations define an economic model. Neither of these phenomena care if you believe that the numbers don't matter. Either of these sets of numbers will kill you if you ignore them. Rick Perry fell on his face in the Florida debate, and then finished a very distant second in the Florida straw poll. It was not because he gave the wrong answer on immigration. Mitt Romney did kill the DREAM Act in his state, and he did even worse in the poll than Perry. Florida straw poll was different from the Ames, Iowa straw poll, where the person with the most buses and the best box lunch wins. Potential voters in Florida were restricted to party activists who tend to have some money and therefore a greater interest in economic policy. Rick Perry's plan for the economy revolves around Texas swagger, as in, don't step in that pile of swagger. Mitt Romney successfully pointed out that Perry was taking credit for jobs he didn't create. And in fact, Texas is declining fast. Mitt Romney wasn't rewarded for tattling, however, as people are catching on to the fact that Mitt created jobs in China and India. Mitt also has a problem campaigning to a small group. Like the Florida Republicans who meet him describe him as, the more you get to know him, the less you like him. He's basically a rich preppy kid who has never worked and has no clue about anybody who does. This results in Mitt constantly sticking his foot in his mouth. It doesn't really have that much to do with his being a Mormon, because neither of the hardcore Christians got the votes either. Bachman, she got almost none. Enter Herman Cain. Impersonable, passionate, and best of all, he has a detailed economic plan. If he weren't, you know, black, he would have swept the straw poll by an even bigger margin. The problem is that Republican graybeards don't really want people talking about the economy too much. They might start learning something, and, you know, can't have that. They won't, however, learn anything from Herman Cain's plan. It's utter nonsense, but it's complicated enough with lots of buzzwords. Republicans like it. This makes the dim bulbs think he's really on to something. After all, he made the pizzas come on time, just like Mussolini did with the trains. The clever symmetry of the pizza plan is it has three nines, like nice even slices of pizza pie. Why, it doesn't occur to people, even dumb people, that there's no reason that these numbers should be the same. Oh, what am I saying? These people go for this kind of crap all the time. Herman's Pizza would have 9% flat corporate taxes, and that would be 2 points less than they pay on average now. An individual flat tax of 9% for everybody. People too poor to pay now would pay 9%. Well, the rich would go from an average of 28% down to 9%. To pay the bills, a 9% national sales tax on top of the 6 or 7% that most states have now, not counting the need for more tax revenue as the federal government shrinks under this plan. To top this off, there would be zero tax on repatriated offshore profits, so that there would be no impediment whatsoever to outsourcing jobs. No capital gains tax, so Warren Buffett would pay no taxes at all. Elimination of the death tax, so the top 0.024% who have estates large enough to be taxed would save $1.4 trillion over the next 10 years. The bottom 99.976% would get no benefit, but would need to make up the $1.4 trillion. Cain preaches elimination of payroll taxes, which means no funding mechanism for Social Security or Medicare, but who needs that? His conclusion is that this would immediately put 10 million people to work and dramatically increase revenue. Let's see. Herman Cain's plan encourages outsourcing and capital hoarding, since capital gains, offshore profits, and rich people in general aren't taxed. The poor and middle class have their taxes increased dramatically, whether they are working or not. 9% sales tax and 9% income tax with no exemption for luxuries like kids. But they get no benefits from the shrunken government. But Herman Cain's plan will get there in 20 minutes or less. We deliver. I added those last two words. PrayNumeral2.com. Go to his website and do whatever you do at Prairie 2's website. Yeah, Herman Cain. Oh, my God. Herman Cain is a disciple of, what's his name? Neil Bortz. Herman Cain, in addition to being a pizza executive, also had a, what was it, Kathy? A weekend or part-time talk show on WSB where Bortz and I used to work together, more or less. We didn't work together. We worked the same place. And Bortz, being the racist that he is, all of a sudden found somebody in Herman Cain that, you know, if you look past Herman Cain's color, well, oh, my God, he's a CEO. He's a flat taxer, a flat earther. He's just like me, Bortz would say, except, of course, for the skin. Ah, damn. So Herman Cain became one of Neil Bortz's little protected birds that Neil Bortz would introduce into the wonderful world of right-wing talk radio. So if Herman Cain, on some weird outside chance, would become president of the United States, you can look for Neil Bortz to become, oh, I don't know, what, Secretary of State? We'll be right back. To be 1,000, I'll never forget the Academy Awards night when that song won best original song. It was the Academy Awards, right? And the co-writers, I think there were 26 of them, all went up on stage and thanked Jesus for being recognized with the Academy Awards. It's out of here for a pimp. Jesus loved that song, right? I guess so. I at least the writers of the song thought Jesus would just think that was wonderful. Ah! Michelle Bachmann. Oh, my God. I know. She's slipping into... she's becoming invisible. You know, red dresses be damned. She is becoming totally invisible and irrelevant. She was kind of funny at the very beginning and kind of creepy and weird funny. You know, creepy and weird. And what's his name? Rick Perry is heading in that direction, too. Creepy, weird, funny. Of course, Newt Gingrich has always been over there. Creepy, really creepy, weird, funny. Rick Santorum is about the creepiest of the group for a number of reasons, not the least of which he has this thing about mummified fetuses. I can't get my mind around that at all. I'm best to move on. Huntsman would probably make a good Republican candidate. Herman Cain. Herman Cain is moving into invisibility also. They're all, I mean, Ron Paul is, I don't know, Ron Paul is just, well, he's Ron Paul and not too much more. Yeah, what's this new guy, former governor from someplace? Idaho, Wyoming, South Carolina, what's his name? Abe Snake, I don't know who he is. He's the one that said he stole a line from the pig man himself, Rush Limbaugh. And during one of the debates, this new guy said, my neighbor owns two dogs. They have more shovel-ready projects than Barack Obama. Horror, horror, horror. It was a real knee slapper, you know? I mean, you just wanted to roll over and stick your legs in the air and laugh until you're exhausted, right? But anyway, Michelle Bachmann. Who'd I leave out? Yeah, I know. I just said that. He stole it from Limbaugh. Oh, yeah, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is, seriously, wouldn't you like to help Mitt Romney stop smiling? I mean, well, don't you this is a guy who's so disconnected from average folk. It is just astonishing. Astonishing. But anyway, I digress. Michelle Bachmann said today, this is a raw story, but thanks to Reg for saying it to me. She said today that it would be foolish to normalize trade with Cuba because Hezbollah will soon have missile sites there. Oh, my God. Let me stop for a minute and I don't know. Just take a little breath here. Now, of course, what Bachmann apparently has not been told is that, you know, after 50 years of a communist dictatorship and some of the best medical services on earth, medical schools, doctors, nurses, medical technicians, yeah, out of that little communist nation there, 90 miles off from Miami, after 50 years, though, of a communist dictatorship, let's call it what it is, Raul Castro has decided to allow Cubans to buy and sell property, houses. Yeah. Now, there are a lot of restrictions to that, but it's just like the Saudis announced today that they are going to allow women to vote and to run for public office. Of course, they can't drive. But I mean, the Saudis allowing women to vote. Well, what King Saud is doing, of course, is trying to forestall having his own head cut off by the pissed off hordes that seem to be circulating through the Arab. Where are we now? It's fall this Friday, right? Is it going to be the Arab fall? I don't know. But in Cuba, announcement was made a couple of weeks ago that Cubans will be able to buy and sell within some restrictions. I mean, you know, it is a communist dictatorship. Buy and sell houses or property or apartment buildings or co-ops or whatever. Now, the reason for this, of course, is because they understand that there is a tidal wave of rapacious capitalist pigs here in the United States who just can't wait, oh my God, to start developing Cuba. So, we're very close to, after half a century, very close to Cuba feeling once again the lash of capitalism. Well, Michelle Obama said that it would be foolish to normalize these trade relations with Cuba because Hezbollah is heading there with missile sites. OMFG. More on this when we come back.
American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag.
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Oh, my God. Okay, before I go any further, not Michelle Obama. Michelle Bachmann believes that Hezbollah is soon going to have missile sites in Cuba. I can't believe I did that again. So thanks to the hall monitors, who I rely on quite a bit, who pointed out to me that I had said Michelle Obama. Michelle Bachmann! Bachmann! So anyway, Bachmann says that it'd be foolish to normalize trade with Cuba because Hezbollah could soon have missile sites there. This is what she said to a crowd of supporters in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Quote, why would you normalize trade with the country that sponsors terror? Now, is she talking about countries normalizing trade with us? We sponsor terror. We commit terror. Oh, come on, Mike. Come on. She went on, there is reports that have come out that Cuba has been working with another terrorist organization called Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is looking at wanting to be part of missile sites in Iran. And of course, when you are 90 miles offshore from Florida, you don't want to entertain the prospect of hosting bases or sites where Hezbollah could have training camps or perhaps have missile sites or weapon sites in Cuba. End quote. And that's a great sentence, isn't it? Huh? She thought she was going to be president. She still does, I think. That's because she's insane. Bachmann was most likely basing her fear on an unsubstantiated report from the Italian publication Corriere della Sera, which was picked up by numerous conservative websites earlier this month. Even if that report were true, it makes absolutely no mention of missile sites. She must have a very, very limited scope when it comes to what she uses as a funnel to go into her head with stuff that's going on out there in the world, right? Anyway, she went on to say, I'm just here to tell you Barack Obama will be a one-term president. The country has already made up its decision. Made up its decision. I am convinced of it. The issue is who will be our nominee? Will it be someone who understands these issues so they will go and fight for them? Or will we have a compromise candidate? Understands the issues like you do, Michelle, right? She went on, because we have candidates that have said that when it comes to Obamacare, that their plan is to issue an executive order or to issue a waiver. I'm here to tell you, I get this bill. I fought it. I am the chief author against it. I was called Barack Obama's chief critic. That's my badge of honor, to be his chief critic, because I understand what some of the other candidates do not. We can't settle, and 2012 is it. We will have socialized medicine forever and ever and ever in this country unless we get it out in 2012. Now, the only question I'm left with when I read something like that, which is a literal verbatim reporting of what the woman said, what I have, the question that just eats into my brain is, who in God's name would vote for this person for anything? I'm serious. In order to vote for Michelle Bachmann, you have to be stupider than Michelle Bachmann. I mean, seriously, you really do. Because what she says is gibberish nonsense. And if you listen, or if someone listens to Michelle Bachmann and hears, instead of gibberish nonsense, received wisdom, oh my God! But there she is out there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, talking about Hezbollah going to have missile sites in Cuba. Oh my God. And Reg wants me to mention about the Saudi women voting. They can only vote in municipal elections. Little local elections, you know, like, I don't know, what gets voted on in little local elections in Saudi Arabia? Chiefs? I don't know, I have no idea. And Reg writes, don't get excited, because that won't be until 2015. Everyone will forget by then. But Reg makes a very salient point. Iraqi women were able to vote for decades and hold public office, so we invaded them. Of course. Let's see, I've made it this far without Obama bashing. But we'll have to put a stop to that. By the way, this hour is being sponsored by Mary in Suquamish, Washington. Thank you, Mary. Edie in Atlanta pointed this out. I saw this a couple of times, and it just didn't register. So much of what I see now doesn't register. You know, from political people, from Barack Obama to Michelle Bachmann. It just doesn't register anymore. It just kind of sits there like, I don't know, bad matzah soup, right? It just sits there. And Edie says the sight and sound, she said, I want to get this off my chest. The sight and sound of Barack Obama wailing on the Congressional Black Caucus made me sick. How dare he? They are real Democrats and have never shirked their responsibilities to all of their constituencies, while he appeased every right-winger he could find. Edie in Atlanta. Yeah, I saw some of that speech that she's talking about. And, I mean, Obama is just kicking black folks' ass, telling them, members of the Congressional Black Caucus and whoever, just acting like they, and yet when he's around white Republicans, it's everything he can do to stay on his feet. It's astonishing. Astonishing. Yeah, go to the black congressional representatives and just read them the Riot Act, right? But when you're around Republicans, Mr. Obama, talk about, well, no, wait a minute, we can do this. Or, okay, that's too much? All right, well, let's do this. Well, wait a minute, I'll tell you what, let me back up 98%. Is that good enough? Still not good enough? All right, how about 99? No? 95.5? No? 99.9? No? Okay, you can have it all. And for the people who have dug in their heels to resist, he's going to stand there and lecture them. That takes nerve. And speaking of crazy stuff, James Warren, used to be, I don't think he still is, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. He now writes a column for the Chicago News Cooperative, which is it's a nonprofit organization that provides local coverage of Chicago. And, you know, the suburbs to the New York Times. So he has this piece. He's talking about Mike Quigley, a congressman, a Democrat from Chicago. And as Jim writes, he had a relatively light Saturday recently. He played ice hockey in the morning, did a beach cleanup with the Sierra Club, and then he hit four block parties in the 32nd, 43rd, and 44th wards in Chicago. Along the way, he surfaced at a conference held by the American Islamic College. It was a quick in-and-out appearance by Mike Quigley, Democratic congressman, with remarks he made to perhaps 100 attendees about the strength of American pluralism, kind of speech he makes to many groups. And he said the following, quote, forms of discrimination come in many forms, many shapes, and many guises. You have my pledge to work with you to fight them. And I think that it's appropriate for me to apologize on behalf of this country for the discrimination you face. End quote. Oh. Oh. Oh, my God. Stand back. Stand back. Here comes a great, loud, across the internet, conservative blast of gas, otherwise known as a right-wing fart. Here it comes. Boom. See, Quigley then bicycled to the first block party, and the Islamic College audience was apparently grateful, but they didn't find his appearance especially notable, as they returned to the business of their meeting. You know, Quigley just popped in. But the noise was building at Red State, at Free, whatever, all these right-wing websites. Rush Limbaugh was just swallowing huge amounts of air so he could contribute to the enormous fart that was about to happen. Jada! Well, the Islamic College audience, nor Mr. Quigley nor anybody else, thought that there would, or were prepared for the response initiated by in the conservative blogosphere and then intensified on radio and television. The congressman was attacked harshly with at least one death threat on a Fox News website that by week's end was still not taken down despite requests. Andrew Breitbart, that piece of human refuse, blogged that Mr. Quigley made a surprise appearance before the primarily Muslim audience. He rambled on about the typical racism and discrimination that America is so rampantly affected with. But it goes on and on and on. Bill O'Reilly decided Mr. Quigley's remarks were a story and thus conferred the high-profile legitimacy to the blogger's vituperation on Tuesday. Oh, there's more. There's more.
Lie to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire.
It's Mike Malloy.
I need this hopeless feeling, like I need a hole in my head.
10 before the hour.
Give up my whole day's wages.
This hour has been sponsored by Mary in Suquamish, Washington. Thank you, Mary. Jim Warren writing for the Chicago News Cooperative, talking about Mike Quigley, Democratic congressman from the Chicago area, who stopped in just, you know, like politicians do. They hear something going on, political meeting or something, and stop in and say, hey, yeah, you know. And one of the things he said was, I think it's appropriate for me to apologize on behalf of this country for the discrimination you face. And immediately, of course, the slime in America, which is pervasive, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain, you know, the slime that has been carefully spread across the country by right-wing this and right-wing that. The implication that somehow Mr. Quigley is a traitor was repeated on blogs and the Fox News Channel. Video links included the lines above about apologize on behalf of the country for the discrimination you face, but not related comments about the legacies of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and others, social media posts, and hundreds of nasty calls, obscene emails, ugly faxes poured into his office, which deleted profane and violent posts and passed direct threats to law enforcement. Huh? But as Jim Warren points out, the conservative echo chamber was in high dudgeon. Bill O'Reilly decided that Mr. Quigley's remarks were a story and thus conferred high profile legitimacy to the blogger's vituperation on Tuesday. Mr. Quigley could not appear, but Mr. Rehab did. Mr. Rehab from the Islamic College audience. Initially nonplussed that the remarks were deemed newsworthy. Emblazoned on the screen, the words questionable apology, Bill O'Reilly repeated the same two sentences Mr. Quigley had uttered and declared, wow, what discrimination. Statistics don't support claims of bias against Muslim Americans, he said. Data and polling contacts, or polling contradicts him, of course. And an unabashed Mr. Rehab said to him on his program, you'd have to be living under a rock to miss the overarching reality. Mr. Rehab called or cited federal figures on rising workplace complaints of anti-Muslim discrimination and polls showing both that 39% of Americans would require Muslims to carry special identification and one-third of Americans who don't think Muslims should be allowed to run for president. O'Reilly conceded, okay, well, those stats bolster your argument, but in economic realms, Muslim Americans are doing well, pretty well. We don't want anybody to be anti-Muslim. Thank you for coming on here. O'Reilly concluded brusquely, with Mr. Rehab having clearly failed to fulfill a role of self-righteous liberal piñata. But, according to James Warren, Fox wasn't done on Wednesday. Its morning Fox and Friends show saw Mr. Quigley, the Democratic representative from Chicago, called a silly old fool by Ralph Peters, a retired Army lieutenant colonel and advocate for aggressive military actions against, everybody. He belittled Muslims with a series of mock apologies like, we should apologize for preventing them from beating their daughters to death for flirting. Eboo Patel, an Indian-born Muslim and former Rhodes Scholar who runs the Chicago-based Interfaith Youth Corps, found the response offensive. But he noted a Gallup poll finding that American Muslims remain very optimistic despite facing discrimination. This country has really turned into something that is hard for people like me who've been in this country for a long time to fully or even partially understand. Oh, and by the way, police said last Friday that they're investigating what appears to be a politically motivated attack on a newly opened campaign office for President Barack Obama in Los Angeles, only days before he was scheduled to arrive in Southern California. According to the Associated Press, there were campaign staffers in a room at the back of the office last Thursday night when they heard the sound of smashing glass. They ran outside and found three front door windows and a side glass door had been smashed. No rocks or projectiles were found. So police are pretty convinced that the attackers used tire iron or something similar to break the glass. You know, hit and run. These are obviously Rush Limbaugh listeners or Glenn Beck things. Police notified the Secret Service and the FBI, and they said they're assisting LA police with the investigation, blah, 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 blah. Obama was in LA, of course, today to raise money for his campaign. It is so strange. Have you been to October2011.org? Go to that website, if you would. Just spend a couple of minutes there. Look and take a look at what's going to start in D.C. on October 6th, a Thursday. I'll be there. I hope you'll be there. October2011.org. All right. Stick around for the final hour here. I've got some more to say about the OccupyWallStreet.org. I'm Mike Malloy. yesterday, we... Oh, welcome back. It's the Malloy Program, 7 past the hour. So yesterday, Kathy and I, Molly, went to, you know, another... One of the things we like to do on the weekend is go to the local arts and crafts festivals. You know, the weather in North Georgia has been very cooperative here lately. And so we went to one up in one of the collar counties around Atlanta. And a lot of fun. You know, the typical, I don't know, a couple hundred booths, all the local artisans and not so local, and all kinds of interesting things, good food, friends. Well, one of the stages was run by a friend of ours from a different lifetime when I was in the music business. So we went over to see him and his family and ran into a woman that used to be in a band that I did a lot of work with. And we started talking about politics and music and stuff in general. And we got around to the demonstrations on Wall Street, the OccupyWallStreet.org organization that is determined to be part of the beginning of a, what's the term that everybody uses, a sea change in the American political system. And, of course, the success or failure of this effort rests on the rest of us. A lot of people have started this, and whether or not it continues is going to be up to the rest of this country. But the conversation focused mainly, since Patty and I are of a certain age now, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, she did her activism from a stage, and I used to do mine from either writing or, you know, getting out and demonstrating and so on and so forth. The band that she was in, she's been in several, but the band that she was in at the time, 35, 37 years ago, was very, very successful regionally, but it was also very political. And, you know, they did fun music, but they also did, political music. Hardcore stuff sometimes, you know, like The Dead or Airplane have done, Remember Them or Bruce Springsteen or whatever. But the conversation got around to who is offering resistance these days. And I said, well, I watched some of the video and what I saw were masses of young people, which made me feel, for the first time in a long time, a little bit hopeful that all of our youth are not anesthetized, which is where society and television and the dominant, the billionaires and the mainstream media and yada, 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 the usual gang of culprits, that's what they want. They want the young people who have played by the rules, who, whether they've graduated college or not, high school or not, doesn't make any difference. They have pretty much played by the rules, and they're now ready to enter adulthood, and there's nothing there but capitalist corruption of a kind not seen ever in this country. So what are they to do? The unemployment rate among college graduates is off the scale. The ticket into the middle class has long been punched. It's gone. You didn't have to go to college to get into the middle class back in the day. All you had to do was finish up whatever you considered, your family considered to be the extent of your education and get a job, right? Just get a job. You could enter a profession. You could enter the labor force. You could work in manufacturing, a factory, be a school teacher, a cop, a firefighter, a college teacher, a professor, a surgeon, a doctor. You know, I mean, the whole thing was open. Jesus, I remember when I was that age, these young people, everything was wide open. What do you want to be, Mike? You want to be a mechanical engineer? You want to be, come on, we need engineers. We need designers. The Russians are breathing right up our asses here. We got to hurry, hurry, hurry. What do you want to be, Mike? So, Patty and I were talking about how things have changed and what young people have to look forward to now. The vast majority of young people, just like the vast majority of Americans, is there still a young elite in this country? Of course. There's still a lot of people that have things kind of smooth and greased and pay for them. Yeah, it always has been. Probably, well, not always will be, because eventually that is going to change, but still exists now. But I've noticed so many people that I know who would consider themselves to be middle class or upper middle class have sons and daughters graduating college, and nothing's happening. These are kids that went to either state universities or private universities. And they're finished now. And they're $70,000 or $80,000 in debt or no debt. You know, I mean, some people are managed to provide tuition and everything for their kids. So they've graduated now. Now what? What have they got now? Well, a lot of kids are taking a look around at this kind of landscape, what the older generation or two has handed off to them. And they are saying to themselves very loudly, WTF, this is it? So there's reaction. And I told Patty, so many of the people that I see in the videos coming from Occupy Wall Street are young people. Young people. Articulate. Young people who know how to organize, who know how to use social media the same way that a generation or two ago a mimeograph machine was used or a telephone. And they've decided to do something. Now, how are these young people being seen by the New York media, by some of the real criminal sons of bitches who continue to support predatory capitalism, you know, the right-wing radio talk show hosts and television people and so on and so forth. What's the term being bantered around? Anarchists, aging hippies, young punks, people with no direction, people whose parents ought to be ashamed of them. You know, the usual attempt to slice and dice people who have decided to take a stand, to put their bodies into the gears of the machine, to see what will happen, to see if the machine can be slowed or stopped. But of course, the establishment is going to label those people as punks, hippies, detritus, druggies, losers, dead-enders. And how do these young people see themselves? Consensus builders, people who are determined to not sit back on their asses and let this all continue. They know. They know exactly what a writer at the Guardian, the UK, said over the weekend, which is everything we've been told for the last decade turned out to be a lie. Markets do not run themselves. Creators of financial instruments were not infallible geniuses. Debts did not really need to be repaid. In fact, money itself was revealed to be a political instrument, trillions of dollars of which could be whisked in or out of existence overnight if governments or certain banks required it. Even the Economist magazine had a headline that said, "Capitalism, was it a good idea?" Notice the past tense of the verb there. So the kids who are facing what adults like to say, and by kids, I don't mean 10-year-olds. I mean young people who are now facing what older people like to say, well, you know, this is reality. They're taking a look at this putrid, putrefying reality that they've been given. And like I say, the common answer is WTF? Are you kidding me? This is it? This is what we've been told is the American, and not so much American anymore. This is what we've been told is the dream of our society, fill in the blank, Egyptian, American, Israeli, German, Greek, British, fill it in. Even a little bit Chinese. And how are the young people responding? OccupyWallStreet.org is an example. We'll be right back.
now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
I've told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse
21
now.
Past the hour. Excuse me. Oh, my. By the way, the sponsor, this hour is being sponsored by John in Maryland. Thank you, John. His message, right to work without paying dues for union benefits, contradicts the no free lunch conservative slogan against subsidies. Except, of course, for banksters. You get that? I've always hated that term, right to work. It's not a right to work at all. It's a right to avoid helping to continue to build the middle class through union membership. Anyway, John and Marilyn, thank you. We appreciate the sponsorship. Back to this the reality of what's going on at Wall Street, OccupyWallStreet.org. And why, you know, you got to wonder, right? Why are people, young people, doing this? And perhaps it's because, as the Guardian of the UK pointed out, which has been giving some fairly decent analysis, very perceptive analysis of what's going on here. You won't find this in the American mainstream media anywhere. It's just not there. But the idea that maybe the time had come to rethink everything, the nature of markets, how they work, the nature of money, debt, to ask what a so-called economy is actually for. And those questions were asked back in, when was it, 2008, when it appeared that the entire global economy is about to collapse. And, of course, it's still teetering. It's going to continue to teeter until it does collapse because capitalism is inherently a destabilizing as well as an unstable economic system. It cannot sustain itself. It just can't. It might be able to go on in one form or another for a couple, three centuries until it finally has exhausted everything that it can get its predatory goddamn fangs into. But eventually, it collapses, and what we are seeing now is the beginning of the end of this predatory system. Now, I was brought up, and so were you, to believe that if anyone made those kinds of statements, they had to be a communist. I mean, capitalism, that's Christian. That's part of the Judeo-Christian underpinnings of the United States manifest destiny. We can do anything we want because we're a capitalist attitude. But it's true. What's true? It's true that it is ending. And anyone who doesn't see that is putting their hands over their ears and going, la, 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 la. Or, I mean, they don't want to hear it. And they're putting their hands over their eyes and saying, no, 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 no. I want to see Dancing with the Stars. I want to know how Chaz Bono is doing or whatever his last name is. You know, it's just madness. I've got nothing against Chaz, by the way. So we had this opportunity back in 2008, and then what has to be one of the most colossal failures of nerve in history. We decided to put our hands over our ears and pretend like everything was okay. We could see it when everything collapsed. It was right there. So here we are now. Everything is continuing to collapse. Why? I don't know why that's labeled as negative talk. I was telling Kathy the other day, prior to this conversation with Patty at the art festival, I was saying, you know, I'm tired of this job. I'm tired of talking about the same things every day. But if it's a political talk show, what are we supposed to do? You know, walk around with a happy-ass zombie grin on our faces like Limbaugh and the rest of the pigs want everybody to have? Be anesthetized, don't think, don't move, don't do anything. Here, take your $12-an-hour job and be happy. Do you know what they're making at Walmart? You know, that sort of thing. And I can't do that, and neither can you, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. unless you're one of those right-wing trolls that just come here for the sexual surge of hearing whatever it is you hear here. I don't know how you people operate. I don't get it anyway. And isn't it becoming increasingly obvious that the real priority, the Guardian asked this question, the real priority of those running the world for the last few decades has not been creating a viable form of capitalism, but rather convincing us all that the current form of capitalism is the only conceivable economic system, so the flaws it contains are irrelevant. It doesn't matter. This is what you have to operate with. And as a result, most of us are all sitting around dumbfounded as the whole thing falls apart. Huh? Do you get that? I mean, come on. Surely you get that, don't you? That's why the right-wingers are so willing to stuff pencils in their ears, anything, so that they don't hear the truth. We'll be right back.
They don't worry about what makes you cry. Your child's in a ride. How they gonna die? Gasoline that starts to fly. ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't.
Here's Mikey, 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by John in Maryland, whose message is right to the heart. He says, right to work without paying dues for union benefits contradicts the no free lunch conservative slogan against subsidies, except, of course, for banksters. Very true. If you live like I do in a so-called right-to-work state, it means a state where you do not have collective bargaining rights. It's just another Orwellian use of language. Thanks, John. John in Maryland, our sponsor this hour. So, back to the topic at hand, the resistance that is building in this country. And most recently demonstrated by the OccupyWallStreet.org action that is going on in Wall Street, Lower Manhattan, and why it's there, and how the people who are conducting this are being attacked, as could be expected, by the right-wing political, economic establishment in this country. The entire establishment is right-wing, so that's kind of redundant. But when the demonstrators or the activities or the people there are mentioned at all, it's in a demeaning, denigrating way, as if they were aimless, directionless, either old hippies or young miscreants that don't know what the hell they're supposed to be doing here in the land of the free and the home of the brave and, you know, this capitalist paradise that we all live in. But what the power in this country doesn't understand is that it's starting to take hold here as it did in North Africa, in the Middle East, and in Europe. A massive, colossal failure on the part of the social slash economic structures. Just an absolute collapse. And the people who are in Lower Manhattan, the people who are going to be in Washington starting October 6th, the people who are going to start showing up at these demonstrations, sit-ins, peaceful actions against this decaying, rancid capitalism, the people, I like the way The Guardian puts it, quote, The occupiers are the very sort of people brimming with ideas whose energies a healthy society would be marshaling to improve life for everyone. Instead, they're using it to envision ways to bring the whole system down. Absolutely. Because the ultimate failure here is imagination. As The Guardian says, what we are witnessing can also be seen as a demand to finally have a conversation we were all supposed to have back in 2008. It seems so long ago. There was a moment when there could have been, after the near collapse of this phony-ass the global financial market, the architecture, there's a moment when anything seemed possible. And here in the United States, what did we do? We happen to have a leadership, untested, new, Barack Obama, surrounded by people who helped bring about the collapse. Oh, my God. Advisors who were instrumental in eating away at the very foundation of a civil society. Those people were put in positions of power by the newly elected Barack Obama. I don't know why he did it. Do you? Is it because he's a fifth columnist? Is it because he's a saboteur? Is it because he hates America? Or is it because he was just naive? Did he really believe that all he had to do was to get elected, to let Americans see that they had transcended some of their bigotry and asinine activities, where actions and attitudes were concerned, people of color or what have you, and that once he was in office, all he had to do was just, you know, reach across the aisle and everything would be fine, not realizing that the Republicans in this country are a force for the rankest, most filthy evil. They are here for one reason now, and that is to utterly destroy what's left of the idea of an egalitarian society and to promote the continuation of this predatory, murderous, vicious capitalism. So that the 99%ers, the ones who are occupying Wall Street, the 99%ers, that's us who are not in the top 1% or 1/10 of 1%, so that we then can be, you know, placed in our rightful positions, serfs. Not quite slaves, but certainly not free people. I mean, how can you be free when you don't have a job, you don't have a future? How do you do that? Eventually, and then Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, warns, you know, if something isn't done. Well, Michael, this is going on in your city. If something isn't done to right the wrongs, then we are going to see blood in the streets. My term, blood in the streets, but that's what he was talking about. Rioting. Well, hell yes! What do you expect? And of course, Bloomberg, while he sounded very rational in that statement, isn't he part of the problem? I mean, he is a billionaire. I don't know from Michael Bloomberg. I don't know if the people in New York think he's a good mayor. I've seen him do some things that I thought were exemplary that certainly didn't come from, well, he's not really a Republican. You know, he switched parties so he could run for mayor of New York, but I don't know from him, and I really don't care. I would rather have a conversation with a 23-year-old occupying Wall Street than with Michael Bloomberg. And I think the reasons are obvious. So, as The Guardian says, what we've learned is that the economic crisis of the 1970s never really went away. Were you around in the 70s? I was. And I don't know. I remember bumper stickers that said, "Are you hungry? Try eating your Toyota." Do you remember those? That was a long time ago. Anyway, the economic crisis of the 70s never really went away. It was fobbed off by cheap credit at home and massive plunder abroad, the latter in the name of the third world debt crisis. But the global South fought back. The alter globalization, a movement was in the end successful. The IMF has been driven out of East Asia and Latin America just as it is now being driven from the Middle East. And as a result, the debt crisis has come home to Europe and North America. Replete, the Guardian points out, with the exact same approach. Declare a financial crisis, appoint supposedly neutral technocrats to manage it, and then engage in an orgy of plunder in the name of austerity. There you go. And here it is. So, what we're watching, and I agree with The Guardian, what we're watching is the beginning of the defiant self-assertion of a new generation of Americans. I know young people in this generation. I know their parents. I know their grandparents. A generation that's now looking forward to finishing their education, if they haven't already, with no job, no future, but still saddled with enormous and unforgivable debt. And like I pointed out earlier, these are kids who did exactly, not kids, these are young adults who did exactly what they were told they should. They studied, some of them got into college, a vast majority of them actually got into college. They're now not just being punished for all that, but they're being humiliated. Faced with the life of being treated as deadbeats or some kind of moral reprobate. So, is it really surprising that they would like to have a world devoid of the thugs and punks and bastards, both financial and political, who stole their futures? Huh? You think? I don't think. I think that's a perfectly natural reaction. Don't you, truth seeker? Huh? A perfectly natural reaction. The people who screwed me out of my future should be eliminated, at least from positions of power, from positions of decision-making, and replaced. Well, what system was it that did this? Predatory capitalism. It goddamn sure wasn't any kind of a socialist idea or activity. Social democracy has been shoved out of the room, out of the house, into the street, kicked to the curb, and told to go the hell away. The one thing that could turn things around. Sponsored by John in Maryland. Thank you, John. His message, right to work without paying dues for union benefits, contradicts the so-called no free lunch conservative slogan against subsidies, except for the banksters, of course. And the message is very clear. Any so-called state that has so-called right to work laws is actually a state that is saying to the worker, you have no value whatsoever. We will treat you like the serfs you really are. Thank you, John. So, OccupyWallStreet.org. And again, as The Guardian points out, the form of resistance that has emerged in this country now looks remarkably similar to the old global justice movement. We are seeing the rejection of old-fashioned party politics. Of course, it's hitting the Democrats first because Republican voters are zombies. They cannot think. They cannot do except exactly as they're told, depending who's shrieking at them the loudest. But among the people in this country who've had enough, the rejection of old-fashioned party politics, the same, the embrace of racial diversity, the same embrace that you see in the global justice movement, the same emphasis on inventing new forms of democracy from the bottom up. But what's different now is largely the target. Back in 2000, it was directed at the power of unprecedented new planetary bureaucracies like the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, NAFTA. Institutions with no democratic accountability, which existed only to serve the interest of transnational capital. Period. And now, now, the resistance is against the entire political class of countries like Greece, Spain, and now the United States for exactly the same reason. Exactly the same reason. That the political class now exists only to serve the interests of international capital and, by extension, international capitalists. It has nothing to do with serving the interests of the people. You know that. Every time you turn around now, there's a new governor someplace, some right-wing Republican son of a bitch who is adding to the woes of people already suffering from what the global capitalists have done. You see it all the time. And it seems like it's not going to stop, and it won't stop until we stop it. How simple is that? How simple is that? And as the Guardian says, when the history of all this is finally written, it's likely all this turmoil, beginning with the Arab Spring, will be remembered as the opening salvo in a wave of negotiations over the dissolution of the American empire. 30 years of relentless prioritizing of propaganda over substance and snuffing out anything that might look like a political basis for opposition. All that might make the prospects for this young group of protesters look bleak, and it's clear that the rich are determined to seize as large a share of the spoils as are still available to be seized, tossing a whole generation of young people to the wolves in order to do it. But history is not on their side, not on the predator's side. And as the Guardian concludes, we might do well to consider the collapse of the European colonial empires. It certainly did not lead to the rich successfully grabbing all the cookies, but to the creation of the modern welfare state. We don't know precisely what will come out of this round, but if the occupiers finally manage to break the 30-year-old stranglehold that has been placed on the human imagination, as in those first weeks after September 2008, everything will once again be on the table. And the occupiers of Wall Street and other cities around the United States will have done us the greatest favor anyone possibly can. Hear, hear. Absolutely. Now, the reality is, in this country, protest against the established order. And the established order is always predatory. Always. I don't care if the established order is social, economic, political, religious. The established order is always predatory and always is designed to benefit the top of the heap, the elitists who set the system up to begin with. So any cooperation will be non-existent. by the power structure. So, what's it going to take, truth seeker? Huh? Here's that same old tiresome question again. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to tilt the public just enough to wake it up? Maybe that movement has already begun. Maybe we're seeing it. I hope. Maybe we're seeing it in Wall Street. Maybe we'll see it in Washington, D.C. Maybe we'll see it around the country. But something has to be done. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.